Jump shot. It goes. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome into another Tuesday edition of Locked On Grizzlies. As always on our Tuesday show, Amari Sankofa from The Athletic joins us here every single week. It's a little later than our normal recording session. Amari has practiced with the Grizzlies, but nonetheless, it's better late than ever, as it did yesterday's show last night. So always better late than ever. Amari, what's going on, man?
Man, it's going all right. Yeah, it feels like it's been a while. You know, I think we took last week off for the holiday, so I guess we have 2 weeks to catch up on here.
It has been a little bit. We took most of the week off for Christmas, as you obviously had plans in Detroit with your family. I had plans here with my family. But nonetheless, we're back at it. And now that I have my Athletic subscription back up and going, I don't know if you like, I just had to call my bank earlier today because my bank detected fraud on my account, and the only thing they said it was fraudulent was my subscription to The Athletic. So I don't know what they're doing to make First Tennessee mad, but it's not great. Nonetheless, it was on hold for 20 minutes to verify one subscription of $9 a month. So I appreciate that, First Tennessee. Shout out. It's great.
Yeah, competition must be in cahoots with First Tennessee to stop people from
clearly
driving to this. I don't know.
Something.
I don't know what happened with that. That's not cool at First Tennessee.
Commercial appeal, or somebody has gotten to them locally, and that's probably the issue here. That's it. Nonetheless, the Grizzlies, they played a couple games over the weekend. One thing I wanted to start and talking with you about, and I think I noticed you kind of had a conversation on social media over one of the games. I can't remember which one, but and I talked a little bit about in my show on yesterday was kind of the play of Ja Morant. And we talked a little bit about that with him in the post game. But what's your take on, you know, when Ja Morant does struggle from the field? I mean, obviously, you know, my kind of takeaway was that superstars are going to attract a lot of attention and they're going to get a lot of different defenses thrown at them. And it's just a kind of a learning process for Ja Morant. Not that I think he's playing bad or anything like that, but it's just a matter. I think it's just a process for Ja as he goes throughout the year.
Yeah. A few people were seeing that Ja Morant hit a rookie wall and just struggling this and that. And yeah, I just thought it was extremely overblown. I think it's been about five games since he last scored 20 points. And, his last few games, he was a little bit more, I guess, low key, I guess you could say. I think two of those games, he didn't even take 10 shots. But I think to say that he's been struggling and say that he's hit a rookie wall is just a pretty big overreaction. I think Ja played 11 games in December, and he averaged like 15.5 points. Efficiency was actually better last month than it was in November. You know, so he's taking fewer shots, but he's making more of the shots he's actually taking. And I think it's kind of just like two things happening at once here that kind of explains why his scoring has dipped, yet he's actually improved as far as his accuracy. I think one, the Grizzlies have been better. And what we were seeing in November a lot is, Ja Morant's first three quarters, he wouldn't have a lot of points. You know, he wouldn't have 10 points going into the fourth. And in the fourth quarter, his usage rate was skyrocketing. He would take way more shots. And he was actually one of the best fourth quarter scorers in the entire league because in the fourth quarter, he would take a lot of shots. He would double shot attempts. And he would do that in an attempt to try and get the Grizzlies to win. The Grizzlies got a lot better in December. They were 8-8 in December, and their offensive rating went up. They were just a better team. They've won seven of their last 12, and Ja hasn't had to do that as much. With obviously if you're winning more games, they're taking care of business better. Their net rating improved. It shows that not playing as many games down to the wire. John doesn't feel as much of a need to kind of take over in the fourth as he was before. So he was actually taking two fewer shots in fourth quarter in December than he was in November. And I think that, partially explains the dip in the scoring just right there. He doesn't have to take 10, 12 shots in the fourth quarter like he was in December. Two, defenses are keying in on him more. So he is, I wouldn't say he's being conservative. It's just that he hasn't been as comfortable. He's not going to force the issue if he doesn't have to, especially, since Jaren Jackson-Jr. Is playing a lot better and he can kind of take some pressure off of John now. So his efficiency probably went up because he wasn't looking for a shot as much. So the shots he did take were like good shots. So
you think? You think? Are you saying it's more necessity that they don't need him to score in the fourth quarter in this last month or so?
I think it's more of a necessity thing. They didn't have as many games, and they just needed John to create. David's shooting the ball a lot better. Tyus Jones has improved as a scorer. Grayson Allen has gotten better as a scorer. De'Anthony Melton has been better. They just have more guys who have just been scoring the ball better, essentially. And I think because of that, John just hasn't had to shoulder as much of that load. So, I would be more concerned if John's scoring dip. That is his efficiency dip. If we saw him pressing, trying to get those points, to me, that would be an issue. Him taking slightly fewer shots. And the Grizzlies winning more and him making more shots than he's taking, to me, isn't a bad thing. Like, that's not a rookie wall by any means.
Right.
It's just, as the season goes on, Josh adapting and Josh figuring out what he fits best, basically.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. And now that you kind of lay breaking it down a little bit, again, my take yesterday on the show was, when you become a player of Josh's caliber, and especially as quickly as he has, that you're going to attract a lot of different things, and they're going to try to do a lot of different things to slow you down. I mean, it's going to be a process for the middle part of the year, like you mentioned in the fourth quarter. They've been doing different things with him. It's going to be a process for his play on the court and how he is able to overcome those type of things, in the fourth quarter. If they do end up needing him to score, what trick is going to pull out of his bag to be able to get to the bucket. So I think that's a great explanation for the Ja Morant scoring. And it's also kind of like, it's kind of weird that we're having this conversation, because usually you're not expecting rookies scoring 20 plus points a game. And you're like, oh, he's only scoring 16 points. That's not enough from your rookie point guard. That's a third of the way into the season. It's just, it's kind of strange in and of itself, but that's where we're at with Ja Morant. That's how good he's become over the last few weeks or a few months of the season. That's just how quickly he's gotten there, and I think way quicker than obviously we thought he would get there, but nonetheless he's there. You mentioned De'Anthony Melton, and I talked a little bit about the show on yesterday. Do you think that he has cemented his rotation in this with this Grizzlies team? Like, he's not going back to something to the bench or anything else?
I think for the most part, the rotation is that much going to be until the trade deadline, for sure. We'll see guys for sure, depending on injuries and whatnot. But otherwise, I think Taylor's pretty comfortable with his rotation that. And, that includes Jeffrey Miller, that's sort of a sixth or seventh man, as we've seen him over the past few weeks. I think Tim Tyus and Grayson have consistently gotten into the game, around the same time during the fourth quarter, along with Brandon Clark. So this isn't really a sixth man type team, but they're up there with similar amounts of minutes. So, there's an argument, of course, that Melton has been the best of those four. So, maybe we'll see his run through something here going along, but he's definitely not leaving the rotation anytime soon.
Yeah, and he's played great. Every time he's gotten in the game, he's taken advantage of his opportunity, and that's what you want to see. That's what Marco, I'd say, didn't do at the beginning of the year. He had plenty of opportunity and never really took advantage of it, and De'Anthony Melton has done just that. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. We'll continue our conversation with Amari Sankofa after the break. We talk about physical fitness a lot, but there's another side of the human game that's just as important. I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, has teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. LeBron and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle in your body, and Calm can help you train your brain so you sleep better, have less stress, and perform at your best. For a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount to an annual membership at calm.com/lockedonNBA. Unlock content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Get started at calm.com/lockedonNBA. That's Calm, calm.com/lockedonNBA. Welcome back to Show Talk with Amari Sankofa of The Athletic, like we do every single Tuesday on this show. We talked a little bit about DeAnthony Melton in the last segment, a little bit about Ja Morant. Grayson Allen is our next kind of guy I want to talk about. He played great in his game on Sunday night. What do you see Grayson Allen as once he becomes what he is in the NBA? Is he a starter? Is he a role player? Where do you see Grayson Allen at long term in this league?
If Grayson continues to 40% from three, as he does over the last month, actually in the last month he shot 50% from three. That's a guy that I think. If you're a bench player, you're definitely one of the first two guys off of the bench because, no team in the NBA is going to leave that good of a shooter on the bench for too long. I don't know if he's a starter quite yet. I think Grayson does a lot of things well. I think he's a solid playmaker. He's a solid defender. He's an okay finisher, but shooting really, I think, is going to be his bread and butter in the NBA. And, just based on how he's looked in the past 3 weeks, I'm comfortable calling him a rotation player at this point. I don't know if I see him as a starter just yet, because I don't know how sustainable his current shooting streak is, but it's been a complete turnaround from the beginning of the season at the very least. I tweeted it Monday. I forget what the exact numbers were, but he's just been completely on fire for three, and he's earned every minute that Taylor Jenkins has given him.
Do you think his finish, or do you think his attacking ability, kind of getting to the rim, is underrated? I think he does that surprisingly well for me, just watching him since we've had him on the team this year for the Grizzlies. Is that something that I think is an underrated skill for him?
I think he's aggressive, and I think he's a good athlete. I know early in the season he really wasn't finishing that well, and that's improved a lot in the last 3 weeks. So I'm not sure if. What exactly was going on in November where he could really barely hit any of his shots, regardless of where it was on the floor. But he's definitely a very aggressive driver. And I actually talked to him after a game one night, and he told me that before he became known as a shooter at Duke, he actually was more of a slashing type of guy. I think his first year was at Duke. And he was his definition by anyone at Duke. So, yeah, he's upside there for sure.
Yeah, it's something I think that we don't really see as much of as we probably will going forward. Once people start to close out on him harder, that drive will be there for him to go around players, especially on the corner three. But I think you're right. I think his best ability is his shooting ability from three. I think that's where the Grizzlies really need to take advantage of using him, different situations. I said this yesterday, I'm not going to get your thought. I would love to see more of him with Ja Morant. I know that Tyus Jones is a great passer and great court vision in his own right, but I'd love to see Grayson play with more with Ja just to see what that offense looks like.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, I definitely think that's a pretty good combination. Grayson is, he really is a great athlete. Once you get past Ja and Brandon Clark, there's probably an argument that Grayson might be the third best athlete on the state. We've seen him have some really nice blocks, really nice blocks. He's really good. So I think, a national fast place with John, Grayson Allen. Grayson obviously is a threat to drive to the rim or pop out from three. There's some utility there. And offensively, even as with Anthony Melton's been, Anthony Melton just isn't the type of shooter that Grayson Allen is. So,
right.
As much as I think people want to see Anthony Melton get more minutes, his offense just can't read a good shooter in Grayson Allen and one of the best for home. I think before the season, I could get that they would probably played the same amount of minutes per game just because they both do two really different things that you need out there. And, yeah, I mean, they've both shown that. But I would like to see Grayson and Jaw together a little bit more. It seems like, I don't know why, but it seems like Tyus Jones gets the more interesting lineup combinations than, like, Jaw. You know, I don't know why that is, but it seems like Tyus is the one who gets the minutes of Grayson or the minutes of the empty gun more often than Jaw. You know, and I'm not sure why that is or if it'll change, but, you know, but I certainly would like to see Jaw get the Grayson a little bit more.
Well, as we got an interesting lineup that I think a lot of us would like to see more was, what was it, Ja and Kyle and Brandon, Jaren and D'Anthony Melton out there. And it happened in the game on Sunday for 18 seconds, so we got that much of it. But that was it. Then Ja came right out. But, lineup combination, I think you're right. Tyus, for some reason, gets more of those than Ja does. And I think – but Ja seems like he's on a very strict schedule as far as when he comes out and goes back in as well. It's not really – there's not a whole lot of deviation there usually when he's coming out and going in. Let's take one more quick break. We'll come back. We'll finish up with Amari Sankofa from The Athletic. Welcome back to the show. Finishing up the last segment with Amari Sankofa. I'd be remiss if we didn't start already talking about trades, Amari. I got this question in a Monday mailbag. I've gotten a question several times in DMs. I'm sure you've done it as well. The trade question is obviously lingering because of Andre Iguodala, Jay Crowder, and Solomon Hill. The question I got yesterday, I'll ask to you, do you think that Jay Crowder still gets traded? And do you think there's something that you can get for Solomon Hill? Like, are those guys still have positive value in the league?
Yeah, I think Jay Crowder absolutely has positive value in the league. You know, he's been traded, you know, I think three times in the last 5 years to different contenders because, you know, as you identify guys who can defend and shoot pretty well. And, you know, and also, you know, just good dudes, you know, if I'm going to add more to the locker room than they take away, you know, I think Jay has consistently been that type of guy, especially when you look at his contract, you know, like
right.
He's not even he's just a lot cheaper than a lot of guys with his skill set would have. He hasn't shot the ball well this season, obviously. He really hasn't. But, you know, I think if you're a contending team, you figure you probably don't need Jay Crowder to shoot 7 threes a game anyway. You know, maybe with fewer attempts, his accuracy goes up. But, you know, but I think Jay, you know, certainly got it. The teams will, you know, call the Grizzlies about as we move up to the deadline. Solomon Hill's been better than Jay this season. And Solomon Hill fits that same category. Just the difference is that he's making more money than Jay Crowder. So my question with Solomon Hill is, you know, will him making what he's making this season impede any potential deals, given that, you know, once you're moving into Solomon Hill contract territory where he's in, you know, like the mid-teens basically, maybe now you're looking at more, you know, including his deal in a salary dump rather than, you know, a contender just absorbing his salary in, basically. You know, so
right.
I think that could make it a little bit harder, but I'm not sure if it'll make it so hard that he's not moved at all. You know, I think the Grizzlies absolutely will attempt to move one or both of them this February.
Yeah, I mean, Solomon Hill, like you mentioned, is an interesting point just because of the money he makes. And it is difficult to move that type of contract for a type of player you're going to get back or second round pick or whatever it is you're going to try to get back for Solomon Hill. So it does make it difficult in the sense that, you know, you don't want to just give Solomon Hill away or have to attach something to Solomon Hill to give him away because that's just, I mean, he's going to expire anyway. So you keep him and you move on. So it will be interesting to see what they do with Solomon Hill just because, like you mentioned, the money is it makes it a little bit trickier than it would just be with like Jay Crowder. Jay Crowder's like $7.5 million or something like that. And that's a pretty average contract in the NBA and can be moved for player for player or something like that. So it does make it very interesting once you get into Solomon Hill's, I think it's $13 million, $12.5 million, something like that, of where he's making it. It's difficult because those type of contracts are very, you know, they don't really exist a lot in terms of the quality of player that you're going to try to trade for or quality pick you're going to try to trade for with Solomon Hill attached to it. Speaking of money, obviously Andre Iguodala is still on the roster. I'm obviously 100% convinced he'll be traded. Obviously, you probably fall into the same category. Where do you think that he lands? What's kind of your front runner on where he lands for the Grizzlies? Just not necessarily what they're going to get, but where he goes.
At this point, I don't know if there is a front runner. I think the issue, pretty much since day one, is that, you know, the Grizzlies are asking for a pretty high price for him. Teams that have inquired about him, you know, whether it's in Houston or whether it's a Clippers, whoever it might be, those are teams that, one, gave up a lot of first round picks as far as, you know, their pursuits of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and Russell Westbrook. And they just don't necessarily have the type of assets the Grizzlies want. You know, they don't really have a first round pick to give. And they have some young players. I mean, you know, the Clippers have a couple of guys towards the end of their bench. But, you know, you also have to put up the contract money to match equal dollar salary. And I think you kind of hit a wall where then you're wondering, well, are we giving up so much that we're essentially breaking even, you know, right, as far as the value we get back this season, which, you know, it's all about the season for these teams because Iguodala is going to be a free agent this summer. Right. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it were more of a dark horse team like a Denver that has a little bit more contract flexibility and more young guys. I think Shams reported last week that, you know, Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernan Gomez with Denver are both available. Now, those are young guys that would actually interest the Grizzlies. Maybe, you know, if the Grizzlies get a Malik Beasley, they say, okay, we don't need a first round pick anymore. It would right. be a situation more like that for the Grizzlies, because at the end of the day, you know, the highest bidder wins, right? You know, like, there are baby teams that want Iggy more, but if they don't have, you know, the assets the Grizzlies want, then, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. So I think it'll be more of a dark horse team, like a Denver or a different team that's contending that decides, okay, I think we can use a guy like Iggy to help us match up against the Paul Georges and the Kawhi Leonards.
Yeah, Denver seems like the most likely candidate for me, just because of the, like you mentioned, the flexibility they have. And I know, just talking with some of their writers and people that cover the team, that, you know, that's the type of player that they would need in terms of Iguodala, what he's able to offer. And it doesn't feel like what they'd be giving up in a Malik Beasley or something like that. In terms of what their core players are, they're not going to give up something that they feel like is going to be a player that they really are, you know, like you mentioned, going to break even, basically. If they're going to give up somebody that's out there contributing all the time versus someone that, you know, like Malik Beasley hasn't played a lot, but in terms of value, is considered to be a pretty valuable player, what he's going to, you know, get this offseason in terms of restricted free agents. So in terms of what I think that the Denver, like you mentioned, is probably my number one destination. Obviously, what they have to offer is better than what most people. And the flexibility it offers in terms of them giving up something in terms of what they see they give up to get a quality player in return. Last question, I'll get you out of here, and you might not have an answer to this question, but I'll ask anyway. Have you been out there looking at trades? Have you seen anything the Grizzlies, you know, in terms of what they should go out and do? Should they be actively seeking players, young players, to try to leverage the trades, or should they just be, you know, trying to get rid of Jay Crowder, trying to get rid of Andre Iguodala, maybe taking on bad salaries? How should they be doing this? Should they be going out and trying to buy young players, or should they just sell all their assets and just wait till next year?
I think that they should do their shopping early. And by that, I mean, you know, that means you can take it a deal, like a bad contract, if you get other assets back or something to that degree. You probably do that. You know, I think, one, this is just a weak summer for restricted free agents. You know, you have Brandon Ingram, who New Orleans should absolutely not let go. You know, like, you would imagine that they would match whatever salary he gets offered. And, you know, and after him, I mean, it falls off pretty steeply. You know, so the Grizzlies can go a number of different directions. I don't know if there is a correct way to go about it. But, you know, if you could package, like, a Solomon Hill and a Josh Jackson, for example, you know, it's like $19 million. And, you know, a team decides that they want to tank and they're trying to shed salary. You know, I know a lot of people have theorized that the Grizzlies could go after like a Gordon Hayward, you know, if you're getting the right assets back.
Right.
You know, I don't know if I like that idea per se, but that's, you know, I guess the type of deal that you would do, you know, you get rid of your expirings. You know, maybe Boston gives you a first round pick. Maybe they give you the first round pick.
Sure.
The Grizzlies gave them and Jeff Green or something, and it's a win-win. You know, like, you can go that direction, or you could, you know, trade Iguodala to Denver, get a Malik Beasley, who's a restricted free agent, back, and you know, and then it's this summer, you know, you save your money, maybe you let some contracts expire, and you use the money you saved to sign Malik Beasley to a pretty reasonable deal. You know, I don't know if there's a right or wrong way to handle this upcoming free agency, not free agency, but trade deadline. But either way, like, I could just see them getting their shopping done early, whether it's taking a bad deal for assets or getting in a restricted free agent that you can then re-sign to a longer deal and, you know, then you add to your core that way.
I think that's a perfectly reasonable answer. I think that I probably fall into the category of, I think you need to go out and shop and try to buy players that are younger players you can potentially get, just because I don't think they're going to have any opportunity this year, next year, to get quality free agents. I think you need to go get restricted free agents that you can match, you know, things like that. People who are on the trade block, like, free agents just don't come here. I mean, I don't know if that's going to change with Ja Morant. Maybe that does. When people see him and the way he plays, maybe that does change a job, you know, how people view this franchise with him here, him and Jaren Jackson Jr. But I mean, in the past decade, more than that, nobody's really wanted to come here besides Chandler Parsons. And obviously that didn't work out too well. So not that it's going to happen again, but it's just, I'm all in on go out and try to get by young players that are available to you, and you can match offers, things like that, and keep them here long-term. Either way, Amari, I appreciate you joining me again. Make sure you go out and subscribe to The Athletic. I guess if you're using First Tennessee, be aware, because they think it's suspicious activity, but it's not, I promise. It's a great price. Amari, what are you working on people can read this week?
Yeah. So I just had my 10 predictions for 2020 run today. I think Peter Robinson had a piece on Zach Randolph that actually turned out pretty well. That also went up today. And then I was two features in the works. Well, yeah, I'm not sure if they're going to come this week or not, but one of them should at least hit before the end of January. And both of them are stories that, you know, American Auto, and I'm really excited about. So just a little preview for sometime in the near future for you guys.
Awesome. Stay tuned for those. And yes, the one by Peter on Zach was fantastic. And I know, I'm pretty sure you put Zebo one into the little top 10, the decade that Joe Mullenix did. I know I did. I think he deserves it. And it was a good piece. Go check that out by Peter. Subscribe to The Athletic. It's a great subscription. I promise it's cheap. You don't ever see the money come out. If you're subscribed to things, go subscribe to this show. You won't miss conversations like we have with Amari. We'll have Joe Monix on Wednesday. We'll have David Cobb on Thursday. So these conversations happen every single day. Don't miss anything. Go subscribe to the show. Amari, let's do it again next week, man.
Yeah, we'll do it again soon. Talk to you.
Thanks, man.